Kane is in the building.
Short sleeve shirt season is here, which means summer is around the corner. Stay cool in the hottest shirts at work, the beach, or at barbecues. Head over to libertyshirtco.com to design your one-of-a-kind shirt. Use promo code 3PEAT at checkout. That's libertyshirtco.com and promo code 3PEAT.
Welcome back to another episode of the 3PEAT podcast, season 3, episode 21. This is our second to last episode of the season. It's winding down, but it's been a great season. And we have a treat for you, listeners. We got another interview for you folks today. Today joining us is former Giants quarterback Scott Bruner. Scott, thank you for taking the time to come on the call today.
Hey, Alex. Great to be here.
Now, Scott, one of the things that we love to harp on here at the 3PEAT is the journey of each individual athlete, because the beauty of sports is that you can start and end your career in a different place and have different experiences and meet different people. So before we really dive into your time at Delaware and your time with the Giants, when did you really start to love the game of football? When was the first time you picked up a football and you knew that this was the sport that you really wanted to pursue?
Well, I kind of grew up on the sideline because my dad was a football coach. So he was a high school coach and then eventually became a college coach and ended his career coaching in the NFL as well. So it's kind of the family business. So I guess I was born with a football in my hand.
So it made it much easier for you to kind of pick up the game and transition into playing at a young age.
Yeah. I mean, it was fun. I mean, to be honest, probably the game to play when I was younger was baseball. Everybody played baseball, and we played football a little bit, but it was mostly pickup football and stuff like that. There was really not a lot of organized football for young kids back then, but baseball was huge where I grew up. So I really loved baseball to start with. And, you know, throwing a baseball, throwing a football, it's kind of all the same.
Right.
Yep. Agreed. And Scott, I'm a huge Jets fan. And as Alex mentioned, you attended the University of Delaware. And I can only think of the great Jets quarterback, Joe Flacco, even though he was there for 1 year. I assume that there's some sort of Delaware connection there. And if you got to mentor him and his development into quarterback in the NFL, and just talk a little about what that was like, if you had that mentorship with him.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, he came up before the draft about 10 years ago now, and maybe more, 13 years ago, I think it was that he was drafted. But anyway, he came up and spent about 6 weeks up here in North Jersey training with me and a couple of other people. And, we had a great time, hit it off. And obviously we stay in contact, throughout his career. And, he had a great career in Baltimore and he's kind of winding it down now. And I think he's hoping to find a little lightning in the bottle one more time in Philadelphia.
And then another guy that went to Delaware that I'm a Bears fan. So there you go. Matt Nagy, he played quarterback for Delaware too. So a lot of Delaware connections. But my question for you is, at what point did you realize that becoming a professional football player was more than just a dream and now more of a reality for you?
Really not until I showed up in training camp in New York, back in 1980. Because when I was in college, I didn't start until my senior year. So there weren't many people really having me on their draft board until my senior year. And I fortunately played on a pretty good team and had a nice senior year and got drafted by the Giants. But I mean, they're coming out of Delaware back then. There were no guarantees that a quarterback coming out of Delaware was going to make it in the NFL.
And I think that's such a great part of your story, how, you were on the sidelines watching your dad growing up coaching, then you continue that journey, and then your senior year is when you get the starting chance and you get drafted because of that. And it doesn't hit you till training camp. And I can't even imagine being in that position. You know, the New York Giants, such a prestigious football organization. What was that first day of training camp? If you can remember, what was it like? Just, you know, what was it like being around the players and the coaching staff, knowing that you had made it to that point where you were with a professional organization?
Well, I think I got my first rude awakening to professional sports before training camp. I was in a mini camp in the spring, right after the draft. You know, when they bring you in, you have mini camps, they do rookie camps, things like that. And I was just at the stadium working out one day, and there was only a couple guys left. And, you know, we're in the shower, we're taking a shower, and all of a sudden somebody yells, "Hey, Emery, coach wants to see you." He's like, "What the heck? What does coach want to see me for now?" And Emery comes back down after about a half an hour up at the coach's office, and he said, "Yeah, I just got a ticket to Chicago. I was traded to the Bears." You know, so literally, you know, that was kind of my wake-up call that, you know, this is a business, the NFL is a business, and you've got to treat it a little bit differently than you did in college.
I like that a lot, actually. I mean, it's a tough business that we don't, as fans, necessarily get to see. But, yeah, there's those harsh realities that, like you just said. Yeah. But my next question for you is, you mentioned that you grew up on the football field. Your dad was a coach. Do you think that being the son of a coach helped you become a football quarterback? Because, as we know, the QB is the coach of the offense and quite possibly the team.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. You know, any kid who grows up in a family, if your father's a doctor, you probably have a little bit of knowledge of medicine. You know, if you were in the building business, you have an understanding of building. You know, you kind of have, even if it's just rudimentary knowledge of, you know, what your father did or your mother did as a profession, it kind of rubs off on you a little bit. And I was fortunate. My dad, as we've talked about, was a coach. He actually coached for some very, very famous and, you know, very good coaches in his career. So I was exposed to, you know, some very smart people other than my father throughout my career. And, you know, just watching them work, watching them operate, and it kind of forced me to compete at a higher level. I remember going to training camps when my dad was a coach at Temple, and the offensive line coach would grab me and say, we're doing pass rush drills. We need a quarterback to get in there and drop back while we work on our pass rush. So he grabbed me, and I'm dropping back. I was probably 15 at the time, you know, and, you know, in high school, and I'm dropping back, and there's these big college, you know, defensive linemen, offensive linemen all around me coming at me. And I don't have any gear on, you know, they're all suited up. I'm just back there in shorts and a t-shirt, you know, and you get roughed up a little bit because they can't control it the whole time. So, you know, I got exposed to higher levels of football relatively early in my life.
You talked about that, how you were surrounded by some of like more well-known, the greatest coaches in football history. So, I mean, I guess Bill Parcells was the Giants head coach during some of your time there. And then even, I believe, Bill Belichick was what, the defensive coordinator for the Giants?
Yeah, well, Belichick was the special teams coach when I was there. Ultimately became the coordinator, and then obviously, you know, maybe one of the greatest coaches of all time. But Belichick, Ray Perkins was the head coach when I first started there. I played in Denver for Dan Reeves. So, you know, some great coaches. Romeo Crennel was a longtime coach in the NFL. Gary Kubiak was on the team out in Denver. So guys who I played with are now, you know, prominent coaches in the league. And like you mentioned, Matt Nagy, who, you know, he played at Delaware in the 90s. So I got to know him a little bit. And so it's a small world, you know, when you really come down to it and you really find out that you know a lot of people. And I mean, that used to be some of my most memorable times were when we were on the road. I'd go down. I was an early morning kind of guy. So I would go down for breakfast and Parcells would be sitting down there. And, you know, we'd sit down together having a cup of coffee or breakfast in a hotel restaurant on the road. And, you know, we'd be chatting and we weren't talking about the next day's game because he was a defensive coordinator. I'm on offense. You know, we weren't really sharing anything with each other. Yeah, but we were sharing experiences of people who my dad had worked with and who he had worked with and how the paths are really crossed many, many times throughout a coach's career.
So, sorry, Castle, I just have one more question. So do you feel that with communicating with all these coaches and just meeting them at some point, it helped to not only maybe strengthen your like football IQ or just knowledge of the game, but also just in life, just, different lessons or just whatever, like what kind of impact did the coaches and everyone around you have on you in your career and then in life?
Well, you feed off of their experiences because they clearly had the experience that I was looking to gain as you move up every level in the sport, from high school to college to the pro level and then from regular season into playoff competition. There's a different makeup and a different mindset and mentality that you have to have going into each of those situations. And when you can hear them, hear what they have to say, get their perspective of things, draw off some of your own experiences, which is much more limited than their experiences, but add their experiences to your own. And all of a sudden you come up with a formula that you can be successful with.
Those breakfast meetings that you had with Parcells, I actually, my grandfather had enlightened me about that story. And I just love to hear it because I think today it's very, not rare, but I think it's special when a coach can take the time to talk to a player like that, even if they don't have the greatest relationship or they're on two different opposite sides of what they do with the team. So I think in sports, we need to hear more like that because I think, it's all about, for some of these coaches, it's all about winning and business, but it's not, because at the end of the day, we're all people and, having that connection is just, it's great. So great [S2] Right. [S1] To hear that. So at this point, we've heard about all of your different, encounters with the Giants, the different players you met, the different coaches you met. But something we haven't talked about is the playoff run that you helped these guys with. So what was that like ultimately? It's New York football. It's the playoff time. This is something totally, totally new for you. What was that whole experience like? Not just the games itself, but before and after and being in the locker room and all of that.
Well, it was a new experience for New York fans because at that point they had not known what a playoff game was, for a generation at least. So coming down the stretch of that season, we weren't a great team and we ended up 9-7 and we were scrambling and scraping and clawing just to try to get into the playoffs. And, we made it on the last day of the season to go in and, again, drawing on different experiences going into that situation. And even though I played at Delaware, I had played in a winning program and we had been in the playoffs four out of the 5 years that I was at Delaware. We were in a playoff competition. It wasn't an NFL level, but it's still a playoff competition. So I understood what the preparation was needed, to get ready for a playoff game and a playoff experience. I was not really overwhelmed by it. And I think that was what was, that experience was very helpful to me in preparing for those games. And, we ended up going down, upset Philadelphia, down in Philadelphia. And then, played the eventual champs, the 49ers out there, and kind of gave them a pretty good game for about three quarters. And then, they put a couple of late scores on the board and pulled away at the end.
That sounds way too familiar, like you said, about the Giants, New York not seeing a playoff, because I think it was since 63 at that time, right? Last time? Yeah, very relatable to the Jets right now.
Yeah.
Seen a playoff game in a decade. But my question to you is, what was your favorite atmosphere to play in, like on the road, like?
Philadelphia was always crazy. And the Philadelphia Giants rivalry was, it was kind of mixed because at that time it used to really go in spurts. So the Eagles might win five in a row and then the Giants would win five in a row back and forth. And it wasn't, really that competitive, but it was still that deep rivalry that we had against the Eagles. And at that time when we played, the Eagles were the big, the big dog. Them and the Cowboys were the big dogs in the division, and the Eagles had gone to the Super Bowl a couple of years earlier, and the Cowboys were always, you know, right there competing for the division championship. So, you know, we were kind of fighting for respect with those two teams, and as happens, you know, it was the Cowboys who we beat the last day of the season to make the playoffs, and then the Eagles who we beat the next week and in the playoffs.
Now, so like during the, when you played till now, when all the different rules changes, do you think the NFL has done a good job in protecting its players and then the quarterbacks and stuff like that? Or do you think they've gone a little too far where now you can't even hit them without it being a flag? What are your thoughts on the, all the
much easier game to play. I wish I could play in the rules that they have now. You know, and there's some points where I feel bad for the defensive guys because, you know, there gets to be a point where, you know, if they breathe on somebody the wrong way or they just bump into somebody in the wrong way, it's a 15-yard penalty. It's pretty severe. You know, but I get it. The NFL wants to encourage scoring and encourage a wide-open game, and they've done everything in their, you know, as far as adjusting the rules to get that, those results. And defenses adjust. It's amazing. You know, defenses, offenses, you know, it's constantly adjusting year to year. To see who gets the upper hand, and you know, eventually defenses will, you know, dominate. You've seen some defenses have been keys to Super Bowls the last couple of years, and then as much credit as Tom Brady got, you know, the Tampa Bay defense was pretty solid last year, you know, in getting them on their run and kind of raiding the ship while Brady and company kind of figured it out earlier in the year, you know, how they were all going to fit together as an offense. So it's always interesting to watch how that happens. You have the rules that are the biggest changes are the rules for the wide receivers, you know, who can basically run around and they, the defensive player really can't even hit a wide receiver, you know, coming across the middle. So, you know, the philosophy of the passing game has changed where it used to be the quarterback was responsible for protecting his receivers, you know, by placing the ball in certain positions to get the receiver out of harm's way. Now, the job of the quarterbacks is to put the ball up high above the shoulders on most of the throws and let the officials protect the receivers. And, you know, that's really what's happened. You know, the officials are in charge of protecting the receivers, not the quarterbacks anymore.
And it's just so interesting to hear, like, from your perspective, how the game has evolved like that, because that's all we've been accustomed to as fans. And then for you, it was completely, completely different. And I think with sports, the rules will continue to evolve as time passes, and we'll have to see what happens with that. But Scott, my final question for you, as mentioned earlier, huge, huge Giants fan. So the Giants have lately, you know, they haven't been playing up to the potential that fans have wanted them to, but they made a lot of big moves this offseason. There's a lot of promise with Daniel Jones. What do you think of the Giants this upcoming season, and do you think they've been doing what they need to succeed and to make the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, they're obviously a work in progress. You know, new coaching staff, a couple of changes in the coaching staff over the last 4 or 5 years, or maybe even three coaching changes, effectively, if you count Coughlin leaving and then everybody else coming in after him. And they just haven't gotten into a solid philosophy. And I think now with Judge, I think he's kind of trying to impart a little more toughness back into the organization and kind of get back to the old Giants that everybody kind of remembers, you know, who played a tough, hard-nosed defense, you know, tried to develop a solid running attack, control the ball, control time of possession, and then get some people who can make big plays and stretch the field. And, you know, that's where they've kind of had struggled, you know, building that offensive line out, you know, so that they can control the ball offensively. And, you know, the game has changed where all us Giant fans, you know, we remember the linebackers. You know, the linebackers are the guys who, you know, were the keys to the Giants' success in the past. And now linebackers are basically have been eliminated from the game. They're basically strong safeties who are playing inside because the game is wide open and spread out and the field spread out. So it'll be interesting to see how they evolve and how they adapt to that. But I think they'd like to get back to it. Tougher defenses, you know, lower scoring type games, and really control the game, you know, with Saquon Barkley, you know, taking the lion's share of the touches.
Yeah, hopefully he comes back this season and he's healthy and he plays to his potential. And I'm very excited for, you talked about that linebacking, how being a linebacker back then was essential for the Giants. You know, you had some great guys like Lawrence Taylor. And I think that's hopefully what we're going to see now with, you know, a guy like Blake Martinez, who's leading the league in tackles, and he's just, you know, destroying these offensive lines. So I feel like there's a lot to look forward to as Giants fans. So very excited for the season.
Always optimistic at the beginning of the year.
Absolutely. Well, Scott, that's all the time we have for now, but I wanted to thank you again very much for coming on to the show. We learned a lot. I, as a Giants fan, personally loved hearing about these stories, and it was great. Thank you for coming on.
Oh, great to be here. Good luck with your show in the future, and give me a call and I'll come back again.
Absolutely. Maybe during football season when if the Giants are not playing the Giants, we might need you to come on to strategize a little bit.
There you go.
All right, so now we are going to talk some playoff basketball. And man, oh man, we've got a lot to talk about with this season. Last night, the Lakers were eliminated. And I know Josh has been wanting to talk about this one. So Josh, I'm going to let you take over. What happened with the Lakers in this series?
So part of me wants to say Anthony Davis is not being healthy. Was one factor, and I 100% agree, but I don't think that's the only factor. They just couldn't get in a rhythm offensively, defensively. It was just a giant struggle from the beginning. They had a few good games, and they got some solid production, but look at game five, Schroeder, the guy who turned down an $85 million contract to sign for even more money. 0-for-9 from the field, 0 points as your point guard. No assists. Who, like, you can't do that. Kyle Kuzma has been so inconsistent in this playoffs. LeBron is the only guy scoring above 20 points, and he's not healthy because of his ankle injury. It's a struggle for the Lakers. They didn't know what they were doing rotation-wise. They had some games where Harrell wasn't playing. Last night, Drummond didn't even play, and he was their starting center who they traded for. It didn't seem like they knew what they were doing. On the flip side, you can't discredit the Suns at all. They were a 2 seed for a reason, and they showed it. The Chris Paul effect is a real thing. More people need to be talking about it. Even though Chris Paul got hurt in game one, his impact just being on the court, his leadership, everything Matt shows in the games of Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, Mikal Bridges, every single player on that team, coaching staff, you name it. It's just incredible. Devin Booker is finally getting the recognition that he deserves, dropping 40 points and could have easily dropped 60 if needed, the way he was playing. It was just beautiful basketball that the Suns were playing on both ends of the floor. And I'm excited to see them advance further in this playoffs. And I know Stevie is too, because he has them going to the finals.
I'm excited too. And listen, I have to put this out there now that my prediction was totally off. I had the Lakers going to the finals against the Nets. And you know what? I have to say this before we get, because I want to hear what Stevie has to say. But I have to say that as a LeBron fan, aside from the Lakers not making out of the first round, I'm disappointed with how he's acted. You know, he is one of the most known athletes in the world and considered to be one of the faces of the NBA. And to walk off the court before the game hasn't even ended, what kind of leader?
And then the next game, so last night's game, the elimination game, he didn't shake anyone's hand. He walked off after the game ended, but you know, Chris Paul's his buddy. I was expecting at least something. All the other players and coaches were shaking hands.
Yeah, and, you know, to me, that just doesn't give a good reflection of LeBron. And I think a lot of people, and you know, Josh, you said this in a group chat last night, I think this can, this series and how he's acted, this can definitely hurt his legacy a little bit. And I can agree with that. And I think people really need to reflect off of this. Stevie, what's your take on this series? LeBron's attitude, the play, everything. I want to hear it.
Well, so I'll start off with LeBron's attitude. I'm going to play a little devil's advocate for you guys.
Oh, boy, here we go.
So should he have shook some hands and stuff like that? Yeah, I mean, that's proper, like, game sportsmanship and stuff like that. But you know what, though? This dude gave it his all pretty much single-handedly. And he had no help from anyone. And the rest of the Lakers just did not care. You could tell. They just, like, the guys were missing shots, taking stupid shots, just not playing good basketball. And if you're LeBron, you got to be frustrated out of your mind from the kind of performance he got from his teammates. You know? You should, like, last year in the bubble, like, they played, I mean, granted, that was a much different team. They had Rondo, JaVale McGee, Dwight Howard. So he was missing a lot of those guys. But besides AD, like, you know, Montrezl Harrell would just, like, what happened to him? He just was not performing well. Kuzma.
He wasn't playing. That I would say that's more on the coaching staff. For
well, yeah, but he wasn't playing because he wasn't playing well.
He was playing well when he was in.
Not really. I mean, I don't know. I'd
find a fit for him because they have so many centers because they have Gasol too.
But I don't know. My opinion, when I watched him on the court, yes, he wasn't the worst player, but when he was with the, like, he was a force for the Clippers last year, and he was kind of a force in the beginning of the season, and then, I don't know, I just didn't see the same Montrezl Harrell in the later season, and then, obviously, during the playoffs, which, like you said, he didn't play a lot, so that's not all of his fault, but I don't know, I think LeBron just, because he knows he's getting to the later part of his career, and he just won a championship last year. This team was rumored to possibly repeat again. And just to get that kind of performance, it was just, I mean, I would be upset. And, you know, why does he, like, want to giggle? And, you know, like, you see all these players, like, after the game ended, they're just giggling and just shaking each other's hand, like, hugging, like, almost like, whatever, what, we lost, we're going home. Like, LeBron doesn't want to do that. You know, you look at MJ. MJ would scream at players in practice. It's just that kind of, like we said, you know, that type of player Jordan is. You know, LeBron is one of those guys. They expect everything and more out of themselves and their teammates and the coaches. And I just think LeBron knows that he didn't get that out of the coaching, the rest of his teammates. And I think the Lakers season was doomed when Anthony Davis got injured in the middle of the season, and then LeBron got injured, because before that, they were one of the best teams in the West and really one of the best teams in the NBA. I mean, they were dominant. It was like, you know what? Yes, this team can repeat. And then once AD went out, they were still winning games, but it was getting tougher because, you know, they didn't have that. I mean, Anthony Davis is not just some all-star. He is a superstar, all-pro, like possibly could be, depending on how his rest of his career folds out, future Hall of Famer. And then when LeBron went out, forget about it. Between the two of them gone, no one stepped up. No one stepped up, you know, at least in my opinion. I mean, Dennis Schroeder, to me, is a little overrated. I'm not the biggest fan of Dennis Schroeder, especially in that game five when he scored 0 points. I mean, you can't even score, get a layup in 2 points. I mean, zero.
Drive, foul, go to the foul line.
Exactly. How do you – you're the starting point guard. How do you end the game with 0 points? And then Kuzma, you know, his rookie year, you know, everyone thought he was the next big thing, you know, and they purposely left him out of the Anthony Davis trade because they're like, you could take Ingram and Lonzo. We've seen, you know, we don't think they've reached their potential. Clearly not. Both of them ascended. You know, that was the best thing for their careers. And then they kept Kuzma thinking, nice, we won that. We got AD and we kept Kuzma. And I was like, oh, shoot, we should have kept Ingram. Or a ball and then gave up Kuzma. So, I mean, we'll see how next year goes for them, but it was definitely disappointing. And plus, that was LeBron's first ever first-round loss. You know, obviously, a couple years ago with the Lakers when he got hurt his first season. They didn't make the playoffs at all. But he's never lost in the first round ever in his entire playoff career. So for them to lose, you know, it was definitely bitter for LeBron. So, you know, should he have stayed to them the game? Yes. Should he maybe have shake some hands? Yes. But I'm not going to discredit or, you know, say, well, that's, you know, he shouldn't be this or he shouldn't be that, or that just ruins his legacy because of what he did. I mean, that just shows you that he cares that much. You know, by him almost seeming like he doesn't care, he cares that much, because if he didn't care, you know, he would just be shaking their hands, laughing, joking, or just sitting there just watching his team get, you know, he just could not sit there and watch the team just get stomped into the court, you know, by the Suns. You know, it just left a bad taste in his mouth. So, to be honest, I think it should show people that he cares and he expects a lot more from his team, and he didn't get that. I mean, we saw, and even LeBron, he wasn't trying to single-handedly take over. He wasn't taking every single shot. He was still passing the ball and trying to create movement, and nothing was going on. No one was hitting a shot. So I'm surprised he really did not flip out. And I don't know, I give him credit for, he really is, like, I know a lot of people don't like him for reasons like this, but I think he really should deserve a lot more credit than he does. And that's my take. There you go.
I think it's a different perspective, Stevie, that was needed. And I like a lot of what you said. And I think at the end of the day with the Lakers, aside from LeBron, there was a lot this season, a lot of factors that went into the results that we saw with them getting eliminated from the first round. And I think it's going to be interesting now. You know, LeBron, this point in his career, he's got to sit down and evaluate. Does he want to continue to stick it out with this Laker team? Does he want to try to see if he can land somewhere else? Does he want to retire? I don't know where he's going to go. Right now, I think he's just going to take this loss, take this time off, and maybe reflect, maybe not think about it. I don't know. But like Josh had mentioned as well, this Suns team is just incredible to watch. Chris Paul, put respect on his name if you haven't already. Love watching Devin Booker. It's a great organization to follow. And I'm really, really excited to see what they do in the next round.
Yeah, you know what? The Suns, they got some young dogs out there that are hungry and they want to eat. You know, they want to – I mean, like, obviously CP3 is the older guy, the pack, but he's leading. He's a perfect leader for them. But like Devin Booker, I mean, the dude's been in the league for like, it seems like already 10 years, but he's still only like 24. I mean, 47 points the other night. I mean, he was like perfect from three. He made like 5 for 5 from three before like missing his first one. I mean, he was locked in. And then DeAndre Ayton was shooting like 80, 90%, you know, because, and then that was the thing too. The Suns were taking smart shots, shots that they can take. The Lakers were not. Granted, a lot of times the Lakers were trailing, so they're trying to take more deep, you know, shots, like 3 points. But the Suns were playing, like, smart basketball. And then even, like, Mikal Bridges, I mean, he really started to take off. And I really like this team. Monty Williams, I think, is a great coach for them. And I really like what they have there. I'm hoping they can – I mean, granted, their season's still going on, and I hope they make the finals. But I'm hoping they're able to keep CP3 because I hope he ends his career here, because I really think if they can keep Ayton, Booker, CP3 together, and then you have guys like Bridges, and even if you lose a guy like Jay Crowder, replace him with someone like that, they really do have a talented team. They keep adding more talent, more young guys, and who knows, they could be a threat in the West for a few years now, you know? So we'll have to just wait and see.
We absolutely will. Now, earlier, I had admitted that I was wrong about my prediction, but I think there's someone else who has to admit their wrongs about a prediction. Mr. Fromwitz, unfortunately, your boys in South Beach were swept by the Bucks. In all seriousness, what do you think went wrong in this series?
I don't know. That's the best way of putting it. The Bucks just stomped them in every single way. I'm not sold on the Bucks, and we'll see, because they got the Nets. So that'll be a fun series. And I'm not sold on Giannis at all. But like I did say, Middleton and Drew Holiday, they are legit. And the only way the Bucks can succeed is if Middleton proves to be that guy in clutch time, in which he has been. And that still stands true, because in the last 5 minutes, Giannis doesn't touch the ball ever. The ball's always in Middleton or Holiday's hands. And they're clutch shooters, and they stepped up in that Heat series. But, man, Jimmy Butler didn't have it. Goran Dragic didn't have it. Hero wasn't playing. Bam didn't score as much, but production was still there. I don't know what went wrong, but I guess they just got to destroy the team and rebuild it back up, because I don't really think that they can make a title run with this, the team that they have. And I don't know where they start or who they get rid of, but I think it's time to destroy ship.
I'll tell you what, the Bucks are mad what happened last year to them, and they wanted revenge, and they want, you know, Giannis wants to prove himself more, like, hey, I can lead a team. You know, the Greek freak, he wants to say I'm the face of the league right now, which obviously is highly debatable, but he believes in himself and believes in this team. And I mean, that's why
he believes in himself, because I don't.
Well, you know, I mean, listen, like, I don't. Yes, Giannis is very good, but I think he's very limited. Yes, he can drive and finish like no one else, and he can play some good defense, but his shooting just got awful. Obviously, he can make a three-pointer or a mid-range, but he's not like Middleton consistent. So, but, you know, he chose to stay here for a reason. You know, he signed that big extension because he wanted to lead this Bucks team for a very long time. And I think they were mad that last year they were the best team in the league. Many expected them to make it out of the East, and then they fell way short of expectations, and the Heat exceeded expectations. And I think that's where a lot of people messed up, including ourselves this year, was that we thought, well, the Heat did it last year. And I think the Heat just kind of had a spark last year, and kind of, I don't want to say it was like a Cinderella run or like a magical run, but I think it was, because Tyler Herro was just awful this year. He was so bad. And they were saying, you know, they didn't, same thing with the Lakers wanting to keep Kuzma, that he wanted to keep Herro, and that's why they didn't get James Harden. And then look what happened. Herro sucked. Nets got Harden. Nets are now moving on, you know, in the big three. Josh, I'll admit it. I mean, I picked them to make it to the finals, but you look at Harden, Kyrie, and KD, they're playing really good basketball right now. I mean, they pretty much – Boston was not a threat to them at all. I mean, they had that one game where I was surprised Boston, you know, came back and won. But whatever, it's one game. But so, you know, to me, I mean, I didn't expect the Heat to get swept. But – and I don't think, you know – I still think that the Bucks will have a tough time with the Nets. I think – Giannis, I don't think Jrue Holiday and Middleton have enough of them to handle with Harden, Kyrie, and KD. You know, say if you cancel out one of them, Giannis and say KD kind of cancel out, I don't think, you know, Harden and or Holiday and Middleton can match up with Kyrie and Harden's type of play and level of play. So that's my opinion, you know. I know, Fromitz, you're gladly going along with that. But not, I know you're not biased either. It's just basketball fans will.
One thing that I do want to point out, which it's not being talked about because it's a very small name, but one big detail that I've noticed for the Bucks, and I think it'll be a huge weakness, is they don't have Dante DiVincenzo the entire series because he's out for the season. And I think he's one of the most underrated guys in the league, one of the great defenders that – on that Bucks team. They're a very defensive team, but a guy like DiVincenzo could guard Kyrie or Harden. And now the Bucks are kind of limited to kind of just Jrue Holiday, because Middleton's more of a bigger guy. He'd probably guard Kevin Durant, but no Dante. That's tough.
That's to me, that's kind of like the Nets' Joe Harris.
Yeah, except Joe Harris is the scorer. Dante's their defender.
Yeah, Dante could score too, though. But
he's known for his defense, I'd say.
Yeah. Two white boys who could shoot and play some defense, you know? But, the Bucks, that was a big loss, and I think that's not getting, like you said, not getting enough attention and talked about.
On the flip side, the Nets are going to have Jeff Green back, which is huge because he's someone who could guard Giannis. So like that's huge for the Nets. That's not being talked about enough because, I mean, we didn't need him in Boston because we steamrolled them except the one game. But Jeff Green is a huge piece. I know, Kelsey, you're a big fan of Uncle Jeff Green. He plays very good defense.
I like Jeff Green.
One of my favorite moves that the Nets made this year.
He's a good veteran presence. He's done a lot for a lot of different teams in the playoffs. I like this upcoming series. I like DiVincenzo, so I'm upset that he's not going to be a part of it. But you know what? It just – him not being there, it's just another test for Giannis. Can he bring the heat now? You know, you got a guy that's a big defender, a scorer that's not going to be there. Can you pick up the slack more as their poster boy? So we'll have to see. Now, this pains me, but while we're on the subject of New York basketball, we have to talk about the Knicks.
Pour one out, boys. Pour one out.
Yeah. Where do I begin? First of all, I have to say that I feel like I'm part of history because I was at game two and I saw the only win of the series. The word to describe the atmosphere that night was electric. In the stadium, out of the stadium. If you're on social media, I'm sure you've seen the videos of the streets and, you know, but there was some idiotic stuff like chanting, "We want Brooklyn." No, we don't want Brooklyn. Brooklyn's going to beat us. But that's besides the point because we're not there. So here, I'm not going to talk that much because I'll go on and on. I want to hear what you guys think. So here are my couple takes. Overall, it was a great season for the Knicks. I don't care what anyone says. They proved a lot of people wrong. Thibodeau was the guy that we've needed for a long time. I know I've done it before, but I compare him to Joe Judge for the Giants in the sense where he brings that tough, hard-nosed mentality to these guys and preaches it on the court and in the locker room. Two, I think that RJ Barrett proved a lot of people wrong this season with how he's improved, and I'm very excited for what's to come. And finally, even though that he brought the Knicks to the playoffs and he had some great stats, he got, you know, most improved, I don't think Randall deserves the max deal. I think that the Knicks should keep him because he's someone that's good for this team, but he can't be the number one guy if you're playing like that. I mean, game five, some of the shots that he was making, he was chucking up threes just to get going, and that's not smart basketball. There's no IQ with that. So do I think Randall and RJ are the future guys? Yes, but Knicks need someone else, and I hope it's Lillard. I don't think it's going to be. I think he's too dedicated to Portland. I don't know where the Knicks' future will hold with that. That's my take. Trae Young, I don't like him. He booed the crowd. He did all that. He's balding. He's afraid of birds, whatever, but I give the guy a lot of respect. I mean, the guy's a baller. You know, he was the best player on that court through that entire series. His range is ridiculous. I mean, one of the things that he did that killed us was he would draw guys to the paint, to the center of the court, and then he dishes it, and then you got a guy like Hunter or Rooter that's right there to take the three. So very, very great. And yeah, so Josh, what do you think?
Yeah, I think you meant Herder or Hunter.
Herder.
I knew what you were Herder. Saying. I know what you were saying. Yeah, no.
I'm the Knicks fan, so I'm only worried about Trae Young.
Yes, I get that. Even though the Knicks should have been worried about the other guys, and maybe they would have won more than one game. But yeah, no, I like all your points. They're all spot on, I think. Julius Randle's a good guy, but I don't know if he can't carry this team alone. You need a guy who's very ball dominant, like a Zach LaVine type of a player. Not saying the Knicks are going to get him. And I know Stevie will not want to get rid of him.
Yeah. No. Keep going with your point. No more Zach LaVine.
So Zach LaVine, just had to say it again for Stevie, so to make sure you heard that. Yeah, Stevie's happy over there. But the Knicks just look not like themselves because we knew they were a defensive team, but I didn't really see the consistent defense that we were accustomed to. But I think that also comes with it. It was tough for their defense to hold up if they couldn't put up the points. And it seemed like scoring was such a struggle for the Knicks. The last game that they lost, game five, they couldn't even put up 90 points. No one could get going consistently besides Derrick Rose. And Derrick Rose started the series as your sixth man. So that's tough to do. You need better efficiency as a team offensively. Defensively, that is the Knicks' identity, but I need to see more physicality and toughness. As a guy like Clint Capella just pushed over the entire Knicks team. Nerlens Noel, Taj Gibson, whoever you threw at him, it really didn't matter. But, yeah, that's really my two cents on the Knicks. It was good to see them in the playoffs because New York basketball is better when it's playoff basketball. But I need to see more toughness, grit, physicality, and the will. And hopefully now that the Knicks have been there, they can continue to build on that and be there for years to come.
I can't stand Trae Young anymore. And I'm not a Knicks fan. He just pissed me off the entire playoff series with his stupid little...
I loved it. I thought it was great for basketball. It built the rivalry. I love it.
I don't know.
It drew in views. It was playoff basketball. He got booed, and then he shut the crowd up. It was great. I think it was great basketball.
I don't know.
It made for great entertainment.
He would get bodied in this, and if he saw Giannis coming towards him, he would, like, fall to the ground. I don't know. He
has a Clint Capella to back him up.
What was Clint Capella going to do?
He stopped all the Knicks who tried to attack him. Reggie Bullock.
What, Taj Gibson's 35-year-old ass? Listen, Taj Gibson played well, though. I will give him that. But, Castle, I really do feel bad for your Knicks. You know, I think they were very, 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 very inexperienced, which is really what hurt them. Super young. I mean, even like a guy like Randall, your leader, has never been to the playoffs before. So, yes, he was the most improved player. Yes, he was this all-star. But at the end of the day, he didn't have any playoff experience. And I know really the same could be said with the Hawks. But, you know, Trae Young is a star. Randall's an all-star. I don't think he's a star quite yet. We'll see next year. RJ Barrett is a young, promising player. He's not that star level yet. So they have that guy, Trae Young, you know. The Knicks, Randall, yes, like we said, he could be that guy, but still is improving. And then Barrett, same thing. So you didn't have that guy to rely on. And really, D. Rose was becoming that guy. But D. Rose is now 32 years old. He, like you said, Josh said, he was their sixth man starting the series. And was really your guy's sixth man the entire season. So you guys definitely in the offseason need to get a true like superstar, especially like a scorer. So if you guys were in a position like that, you can have someone like, say, Dame just take over. I mean, you see what he does in Portland and then start drawing all that attention. And then you can get a guy like Randall a nice open look or a guy like Barrett. And I think you need like a true ball handler who's not Alfred Payton and then D. Rose, you guys just overplayed him. You know, he was just towards the end of the series, it was tough. I mean, coming off all those injuries and that age and just he doesn't have a lot of stuff in the tank like he did coming into this league and the way he led Chicago in the beginning part of his career. So, you know, I was a little disappointed that they went out in five. I was hoping that series would go into seven or six or that the Knicks would just win. I do not want to watch Atlanta, to be honest. I they just kind of annoy me. And they just made every single shot, too. It was just like every single shot just seemed to go in for them. Not even just Trae Young, but Bogdanovich was unstoppable. Even Gallinari's
whenever Hunter was in the corner, you knew it was going in every time.
Oh, yeah. And Gallinari, too, the ugliest haircut. Ugh. It was so bad. So bad.
He looked really out of shape to me, except for one game in that series.
He did.
He does not look like the same Gallo that was with the Knicks at one point.
No, not at all. And then, Castle, did you see the guy who spit on Trae Young or no?
I saw the video. I didn't see the guy personally at the game, but it's honestly, it takes away from the game, stuff like that. And it seems like it's been a string of events lately. There was that. There was Russ getting the popcorn thrown at him.
Kyrie the water bottle.
Yeah, and we could harp on this very quickly, but you know, listen, I understand that we, you know, for a very long time during this pandemic, that sports couldn't be enjoyed the same way, and people were cooped up in their houses, and I get that, but you know, these guys, yes, they're athletes and they're there for our amusement and entertainment, but this is their jobs. You're not going to go to a guy who's working at an office desk and start spitting and throwing water bottles at him. So why are you going to do it to one of these players? And I think that the NBA had to come out multiple times and release statements, and it's blown up all over the news. It's sad because that's not what sports is about. It's about people coming together to enjoy watching whatever sport it is. And that's what it really is. And, you know, whether you're a Boston fan, whether you're a Wizards fan, you're a Knicks fan, that's not an accurate representation. And I think that's really unfortunate that some people will end up portraying it that way, but that's not the case. And, you know, if you guys have anything else you want to say on it quickly, you know, cause I know this has been some pretty big, it's been a big part of the playoffs, unfortunately.
And I agree with that. It's totally uncalled for. Like I said, Trae Young really did irritate me, and I really, like, he was getting on my nerves. But at the end of the day, don't spit on him, boo him. You know, Paulding chants is messed up, but like it's a funny chant. Sorry for my dog; she's going crazy right now. But you know, like yeah, like whatever. You know, the Paulding chants. I guess you can get away with, but to spit on someone, that's just disrespectful. That's like degrading someone. Like if someone spit on the guy who spit on Trae Young, he would probably, you know, try to punch the other person in the face who spit on him. So. Knowing that he wouldn't, like, get – obviously security would take care of him, but, like, knowing he could kind of get away with it, that's just such a, like, a soft move to make. Like, you're really not, like – you're not cool. You're not tough. You're not, like – it's just disrespectful. It's just not right. And then even, like, a water bottle, like, yes, you're not going to hurt it unless we threw, like, a Yeti, you know, at him. Then you might break a nose or something like that. But, like, why are you throwing things at guys? Or, like, popcorn, like – come on, if you're at the movies and someone just takes popcorn and just dumps it over your head, you're going to get mad. So just because you know that these players can't go into the stands and, you know, fight you, like, that you can get away with it, like, come on, you know? You wouldn't want your son, you wouldn't want yourself to get this stuff happen to you. So why are you doing it? You're not, like, cool. And now look at them, they're banned, you know? So now they're the suckers. So, yeah, the players were obviously, like, irritated and frustrated. And sucks that it happened to them. But at the end of the day, it just, you know, they were really unharmed. And, I mean, Trae Young obviously had spit on him, so that's gross. But now these players, or now these fans are banned. Who knows how long they're banned for. And what should have been an enjoyable experience was now ruined because they decided to do such a stupid action that really, like, you could just boo them and set a few chants and whatever and call the day. But nope, you gotta go step above. And just people don't think something, people are idiots. That's what we could take away. People are idiots, especially sports fans, hardcore sports fans. They don't think, they just are stupid. And there's a point where, you know, you can go crazy, you can go nuts, maybe a little overboard, but then there's overboard, and that's where you got to draw the line. And then these guys did not draw the line, saw what happened, and not a good look for anyone.
Josh, anything that was missed that you want to cover from your end?
Yeah, I mean, you guys said it best. Like, you guys touched on everything. Imagine, like, Russ or Kyrie or Trae went into the stands and tried fighting them. Obviously, they couldn't, and that's why the fans did it, because they knew they could get away with that. But, yeah, now they're banned probably for life. I know the guy in Boston who threw the water bottle at Kyrie was arrested, so – the NBA security, they're taking precautions and the right actions, and this shouldn't happen because it's taken away from the enjoyment of these playoffs, and hopefully it stops and we can go back to enjoying playoff basketball for the real reason, for the enjoyment of the sport.
Absolutely. Now, before we wrap up, we are approaching round two of the playoffs. So, of course, we got to make some predictions here. So, we'll start with the East. Prediction for who we think is going to make it out that is a surprise. Let's go with that. Who we think the surprise of the East is going to be. For me, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think I have to go with Atlanta. I have a funny feeling that they're going to take it to seven games with Philly and they're going to win, especially if Embiid is not back. You know, the Wizards, yeah, they won a game, okay, but we'll get into the Wizards another time. So that's my prediction. And then the West, I mean, I feel like the West will be kind of obvious, but if I had to make a prediction, if the Mavericks end up beating the Clippers, watch out for Dallas to come out of round two as a winner. So that's my prediction. Josh, better not hear the Nets from you, because I think we all know how we feel about them coming out. So who's your surprise / sleeper team to make it a winner out of round two?
And for the East, I'm also going to go Atlanta. I think matchup wise, it goes in their favorite compared to the Wizards. I like Capella as a big man on Embiid. He won't stop him, but he could possibly contain him. Tobias Harris, you got John Collins, who's a good defender. We saw what he did on Randall. Basically shut him down, forced him to bad shots, possibly double-teaming him and forcing the ball out of his hands. And then you got Ben Simmons. Can't shoot the ball, so you force him to shoot. Got DeAndre Hunter, who is a very good defender who could match up size-wise on him. Trae Young, if he gets a shot going, it's dangerous and electric what he could do. Then out West, this is tough. And it could go any way, it seems like, with this series, with the teams remaining. But I think I'm going to go with the Nuggets. As much as I love the Suns, and I really do want to see the Suns, I think the way the Nuggets handled the Blazers and everything that was thrown at them, they had a great answer to it. Damian Lillard dropped 55 with two buzzer beaters. Jokic took over and put the team on his back and carried them to the wins. Michael Porter Jr. stepped up, dropped 22 in the first quarter. Austin Rivers is playing great defense and shooting the ball well. And the rest of the team is still stepping up because they know the absence of Jamal Murray and Will Barton even. And I don't think the Nuggets will win, and I want to see the Suns win, but I won't be shocked if the Nuggets win that series. So those are my two sleepers.
I like the Nugget. I like that Nuggets pick. I'm a little skeptical on them, but I can definitely see that. Last but not least, Mr. Bonazzo, who are we liking for the East and the West?
So, obviously, like I said, I have the Nets coming out, and I know you didn't want me to – well, you didn't want Franz, and that's fan to say that, so I can say it. So, for me, though, maybe I'll give a surprise, like, performance.
Ooh, I like this. Okay. Yeah.
So, obviously, I have KD winning, the Nets and KD and Kyrie and the big three there, Harden. But for my surprise performance, I think Bogdanovich is going to continue his hot streak. Obviously, Trae Young's a starter, but I think Bogdanovich really was a key part in the Hawks really putting away the Knicks. And I think because, you know, Trae Young's probably be guarded by Ben Simmons, I would imagine, because that's like their guy. So I think Bogdanovich will really have a big series. And even if the Hawks lose, I think they will be very competitive with the Sixers. And I think really it will be because of, obviously, Trae Young. But we know Trae Young. Like I said, he's an already established star. I think it will mainly because Bogdanovich will continue his good play. He'll shoot well. He'll play some good defense. So that's that. And then out of the West, we have an upset with, depending who wins the Clippers-Mavericks series, I think they're going to take down the Jazz. I think, and I especially think Not that I don't like the Jazz. I don't know. Yes, they have been playing well. But Luka is just, he's going off right now. And then Rudy Gobert is very good defensively. But besides that, you know, he's not a perimeter threat from, you know, beyond the arc. And both teams, the Clippers and the Mavericks, you know, they got some guys that can make some threes. So I have whoever that winner is, I think they're going to take down the Jazz. And then surprise performance, you know, the Nuggets, I think Michael Porter Jr., I think he, same thing. He played really well this first round. And I think he's really going to, again, keep it up. Obviously, we expect Jokic, but Jokic is going to get a lot of attention, especially with Ayton. So, and Ayton can kind of match up well with Jokic. So I think Michael Porter Jr. and that Mikal Bridges matchup, I'm assuming maybe that's where they'll kind of match up with each other. I think that'll be very interesting. I think Michael Porter Jr. will really have a lot of success and continue shooting lights out. So those are my kind of surprise picks and performance.
You want to say something about that? I don't think it'll be Michael Porter Jr., but I think it's going to be Aaron Gordon.
Okay, that's interesting.
I could see Aaron Gordon because he's got the strength, the size, and a little more weight on like a Jake Crowder. And Jake Crowder's a good defender, don't get me wrong. I think Aaron Gordon is a little bigger, so I could see him giving him the work in the post.
I don't like headband Aaron Gordon. I don't know. I don't like Nuggets Aaron Gordon. Not like I still like him as a person and player. I just don't like. I liked him on the Magic. You know, double zero, dunking all over the place. You know, and I don't know. I'm not really vibing with Nuggets Gordon, but that's a conversation for another day, you know?
It is weird to see Gordon not in the Magic blue jersey doing these crazy dunks, but it's also good to see the guy in the playoffs because this is the first time in his career, I believe, never made it with Magic, right? Yeah? Yeah, so.
He made it last year, at least.
Last year.
He's made it before.
In the bubble.
Right. Right. Well, so I'm glad – let me put it this way then. I'm glad to see him in the playoffs with a team that has more potential because I think I like you, Stevie. I've always liked Gordon. I think he's a solid guy, solid player. But we'll have to see. This playoff basketball is only going to get better. And next week, our final episode, I think is going to be a lot of predictions, a lot of diving into these next upcoming games. So your job, folks, is to stay tuned. Season finale next week. We're capping it at 22 episodes on the season. We're going to take a break and come back in the fall. But don't worry, we're not going to leave you hanging. We're going to give you a great episode, a great season finale as always. But that's all the time we got. Of course, the end of the show, we like to give our shout-outs. Shout out to our social media guy, Matt Angler, always doing a great job keeping you guys updated with that content and sports. So please keep following the page, giving those posts likes. And we also want to give a shout out to our partner, Wild Chat Sports. They're doing a great job pumping out some content too. For all of you boxing fans that are looking forward to the Logan Paul Floyd Mayweather fight, Kevin, the CEO of Wild Chat Sports, actually did an interview with him. It was their 40th episode. Great interview with Floyd. So go check that out. And we will see you next week. Thank you, everyone.